In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
The exclusive sponsor of Grant and Danny's, the law firm of Condori and Murad. They can guide you and your family in the right direction by helping you to draft a will or set up a trust. They can also create a healthcare power of attorney. They took good care of my parents and can take care of you. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that G&D sent you so that you can get a discount. KMLawyers.com. We're covering the Commanders all day and all camp long, thanks to our friends at Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenry'sWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Let's go right now to the BetQL guest hotline. Welcome onto the show, Cameron Wolf. You see him on NFL Network as one of their national reporters. He is based often in Miami with the Dolphins, and that's where he was today, covering the joint practice between Miami and Washington. Cameron, thanks for the time. You're on in D.C. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing great, buddy.
Doing very well. Thanks for a few minutes. Let's just start with what you saw from Jaden Daniels. I always like when the reporters in other markets in these joint sessions get to see him for the first time. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought he looked really good today. I actually have known Jaden a little bit. I was in LSU for his pro day and interviewed him for NFL Network there. And so I've been kind of following his journey from a distance, but I haven't got to go to Washington through my kind of camp tours this year. And so it was, I live here in Miami, and I got to see joint practices here. And most of my eyes today were on Jaden. And I saw a guy that looked comfortable. He looked in control. You got a Dolphins team that threw a lot of blitzes at him, and he wasn't perfect on all the plays, but he definitely didn't look like a rookie swimming underwater like I think a lot of rookies do. And so I came away impressed. I thought that the Commanders had their franchise quarterback when they drafted him, and today just kind of reaffirmed that belief. He had a really good preseason start last week, and I think he's building upon that. And so, the offense is very much a lot of 3- and 5-step drops, I think, to take care of their tackles. But I think that's a good way to get your quarterback comfortable. And everything I've seen from Jaden Daniels makes me think he's going to have some early success.
Cameron, what does he have now that kind of no matter what, if all the chips are down, things are bad, he can sort of rely on, fall back on? And what do you think he needs to work on at this stage in order to get where maybe he wants to go?
Yeah, I think he's probably going to have to work on what do you do when chaos happens, right? Because it's going to happen. They obviously don't have an A-plus offensive line, and there's going to be a lot of blitzes sent his way. And so how does he respond to the pressure? How does he respond when the first read isn't there? And so I think that's something we won't see until the regular season. From what I understand, he's going to play maybe 1 to 2 drives this week. And so you're not going to see him in a full function of a game. But what happens when you're game planning for him and sending blitzes his way? Does he completely rely on his legs, or is there ways he can use his arms and his quick ability to process to beat defenses? That's something he's going to be challenged at early.
Cameron, as far as the play time and the length of the time on the field for guys this weekend, how much of a test is Washington actually going to get? Are the Dolphins starters going to go?
Yeah, I think you'll see the Dolphins starters, some of them go for a little bit. Now, they've had some injuries, and so you won't see the full version of them. Jalen Waddle, Jalen Ramsey, Odell Beckham, Javon Holland, those are some guys who won't play this week. They all kind of have minor injuries that they're dealing with. But I do imagine that you'll see some of their starters. They didn't play them at all last week. I think you'll see maybe 1 or 2 drives for those guys getting their feet wet. probably similar to what you see from Washington starters as well.
NFL Network's Cameron Wolf with us here on Grant and Danny. So you mentioned just, you know, obviously with Miami, right? I think Mike McDaniel did such a good job of figuring out and catering things to what Tua does well down there, right? Just in terms of getting the speed, yeah, the yards absolutely. After the catch, finding him some, you know, clean throwing lanes, trying to keep his feet clean, etc. What sort of things are applicable maybe for Washington and Cliff Kingsbury and company to do like that for Jaden Daniels to give him some success to hit the ground running?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the money. I think that, you know, there's a stat called time to throw that I think is my favorite stat for young quarterbacks. And Tua Tagovailoa leads the NFL in time to throw. It's essentially how quickly you get the ball from the snap to out of your hands. And so, you know, I think there used to be a notion, a negative notion of like the check down guys, the guys who throw it to the backs or to the slot receivers so quickly. But I think in this new NFL where speed and getting the ball in space is such a key, I think that's actually a positive. Like if you can make your reads very quickly, then that I think that helps you maximize your playmakers and also prevents you from getting hurt. One of the reasons why Tua played all his games last year was not because they improved their offensive line dramatically. It was because he got the ball out even quicker, and he was in a position where he could protect himself just by getting rid of the ball. And so I think for Jaden, obviously he has his legs, and that's going to be a part of his game. But I think the real focus is, hey, we don't need to go to our fourth read on most plays. Most reads, your first and second read is going to be good enough, and you can have success, and if not, then get rid of the ball or make a scramble.
Cameron Wolf is with us, NFL Network reporter, who's in Miami covering the Dolphins and the Commanders this week at joint practices. He'll be at the game, presumably on Saturday night as well. What did you make of Dan Quinn suggesting that outside of Terry McLaurin, there's still a lot TBD for Washington at wide receiver, including who their other starter is?
Yeah, I thought it was very transparent, and I appreciate it. I think that it's a very much in a kind of a real-life look into where Jahan Dotson is. He's a guy who was a first-round pick a couple of years ago. I think the anticipation was that he was going to be a kind of a duo with Terry McLaurin, and it just has not happened. You know, he had a little bit of upside his first year, and injuries happen, and this camp has been rough. You know, he's had some drops. He's had some kind of slow moments, and I think he talked today to the media and said, you know, confidence has been something he's been working on his end. And I actually got a chance to talk to Dan Quinn after practice, and I asked him about that receiver spot, and the first name he mentioned to me was Olamide Zaccheaus. And, you know, no offense to Olamide Zaccheaus, but if he's your number two receiver, then I think there's definitely some work to be done in that room. And I think it says a lot about the guy who's supposed to be that guy. And so I think that's a position that they're still looking for. They're looking for someone to step up. And if it's not one of the guys in that room, I could certainly see them looking in the market to go get a number two receiver before the season starts.
Who is Jahan Dotson as a receiver? I sort of had this wrong. I've been all over the pendulum here on this camera. And when he came out, I said, wait, there's more to this than meets the eye, not just a slot guy. I think he was hampered at Penn State by bad quarterback play. His year one kind of validated that. Last year was disappointing for everybody. Now he's kind of working more in the slot. I don't know exactly what he is or where he fits. Like, if all goes well, if Dotson reaches his ceiling, what is he to you?
Yeah, I think he's a nice complimentary number two or number three receiver. I think that's all they're asking him to be. I don't think you need the guy to be a 1,000-plus-yard receiver. I think you need a guy who can play in the slot. If you need to, can play outside. But I don't think the expectations of a first-round pick should no longer be the burden upon him. I think you just want a guy that can be a steady starter and contributor to the offense. And right now he's not that. He hasn't shown to be that at this level. And so I think if you lower expectations, but also hopefully rise his confidence, then maybe you get you a player who gets you 700-800 yards as a complimentary guy for Terry McLaurin. I think they would take that this year.
Cameron, obviously covering the practice day for NFL Network, you mentioned getting to talk to Dan Quinn, but I'd imagine you had some other convos as well. They took good care of you. Who did you catch up with, and what did you learn about Washington?
Yeah, I caught up with Jaden Daniels as well. And like I said, I've known Jaden a little bit, and I really just wanted to get some insight for him of just kind of what this journey has been like. A lot of times as a rookie quarterback, you're swimming, going from, you know, pro day combine to pro day to draft to on the field, and you never really have a chance to breathe. But Jaden, man, he's cool and collected. He's got that Cali cool vibe about him that, you know, whether if something bothers him, you can't tell, you know. And I thought it was really cool. I had a conversation with him about the blitz packages for Miami because they sent like four or five different blitzes at him. And he giggled and he was like, man, I was waiting for it. I thought I was ready. And he's like, they got me on some and I got them on some. But he's like, I needed that. He's like, I needed that, the looks to be able to figure out how I adjust, how I do things in real speed. And he also just talked about his biggest surprise has just been kind of the speed of the defensive alignment. He said a lot of times you think about, you know, the receivers and everything, but he's like, the defensive alignment closed so quickly. And so that's really forced me to speed up my processing. And so we talked a little bit in about that and his journey. I think that he's really connecting with Cliff Kingsbury. He kind of shared a little bit of perspective with me about how Kingsbury's adjusted the offense to fit his skill set a lot more. And he can't wait for Tampa. He said like three or four times in our conversation, man, I'm counting down the days to Tampa. And he kept saying, man, I want to play more. I want to play more. He was saying he wanted to play more last preseason game, but you know, Dan Quinn's got him on a certain amount of snaps. And so he's eager and ready to go. He also joked with me that he and his LSU guys will compare stats all throughout the year. And that's going to be a competition between them. And Rashad White's another one of his guys there in Tampa, and they have a little competition for that first game against the Bucs as well.
So you mentioned Tampa week one. Todd Bowles loves to blitz everything. I imagine a rookie quarterback, he'll be licking his chops. How do you think, you know, the team will prepare for that? And Jaden Daniels, by extension, you know, sort of counteract some of those things? Because that's kind of the design here, right, is Bowles trying to make you uncomfortable?
Absolutely. I think that's why when I mentioned Jaden saying he encouraged those blitzes, that's why I think this practice session was so good, because a lot of times in preseason, your game plans are vanilla. You don't even see blitzes in the game. And so the joint practices may be more of a blitz look for Jaden than he actually gets in the preseason game on Saturday. And so they're not Todd Bowles blitzes. Like no one blitzes like Todd Bowles. And so it's not like Miami's simulating that. But the big thing is, how do you react when something catches you by surprise? And I'm sure there's going to be some blitzes that Todd sends week one that catch Jaden by surprise. But the more reps he can see against them, the more he can learn, okay, how quickly do I got to get the ball to my hot? Can I get to my second read on the look, or do I have to immediately go to the check down when I see the blitz? How quickly do I run? Who is my go-to receiver when all else fails? You know, if Terry is double teamed, where do I go? Like all these questions that I think are easy to go through on a whiteboard when you're in the film room are a little bit more complex when you're on the field. And so I think he got a little bit of it today, but it'll be nothing like week one when Todd's bringing all those blitzes.
Cameron Wolf, NFL Network, based out of Miami, joining us on G&D. Before we let you go, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the Dolphins, the opponent this weekend. I know that's home base for you. They've been excellent offensively. And in the regular season the last couple of years, they've started as fast as anyone, and they've been as tough a team to beat as there is, and then they've really petered out. So two-parter here. Number one, how do they get over the hump? And then secondly, there's a good chance they're not going to have a single rookie starting for them this year. It's a pretty loaded roster. Should the expectation be that they're back in the playoffs, even out of that really tough division?
Yeah, I'll take this backwards. The expectation for this Dolphins team is winning a playoff game at minimum. I think if they don't win a playoff game, it's a disappointing season. They've made the playoffs the last 2 years, but lost in the first round. And that has been the focus all offseason. I've talked to players and coaches here, and they've talked about those December and January months that you've mentioned, the times they've collapsed. How do we get better in that time? And even small stuff like Mike McDaniel a few times this offseason has started his meetings at 8:24 or 10:24, with the 24 mark at the minute mark being important because they haven't won a playoff game in 24 years. It's the longest streak in the NFL. So he's trying to tell his players, like, let's embrace it. Let's attack this fact that, you know, the reality is me on NFL Network, people on ESPN, we're going to talk about this when it gets to the winter months. Whether the Dolphins are 11-0 or 9-2 or 8-5, whatever their record is, it's going to be this team collapsed last year and the year before. Why are they not going to do it again? And so I think they're trying to embrace it early. They're also trying to change their mentality of, you know, some teams think they're soft. I've talked to defensive coordinators, and the perspective is, hey, this team scores a lot of points. This team's a video game team, but if you get them in December and January, particularly in cold weather, they're going to wither. And so they've talked a lot about being the bully instead of being bullied. Now, all of that sounds great. We're going to have to see it on the field. And a lot of that won't come into those playoff months. But I think this team knows that no longer are playoffs the goal. It's winning a playoff game and legitimizing themselves in those winter months as not just a video game team.
Cameron, this is awesome, buddy. Really appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys.
You got it. Cameron Wolf, NFL Network, with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Couple of notes, NFL and locally here with the Commanders to get to, that came down while we were having that conversation. Out of L.A. with the Rams, this is kind of interesting. So in the Rams preseason game coming up, you already know that Sean McVay doesn't ask his players to do anything during the preseason that are starters.
Right.
He's also not going to do anything during the game. He's going to be in the broadcast booth, at least partially, for their upcoming preseason game. Remember, there's been a lot of talk about him maybe being on ESPN eventually or whatever. So he is named Aubrey Pleasant his acting head coach for the preseason game. So he's going to give one of his assistants, who is, by the way, a member of the old Shanahan staff here in Washington, D.C.
No.
That I knew back in the day.
You don't say.
He's now the pass game coordinator defensively and the DB's coach. He's been in Detroit with Dan Campbell as well. But Aubrey Pleasant's going to coach the Rams on the sideline. McVay will be down on the sideline some, but it sounds like for at least a good part of the game, will be in the broadcast booth during the preseason game.
Doing that like Greg Popovich bit, or Don Nelson used to do that, to like give some of his assistants shine during games.
This is becoming a trend. We saw Mike Vrabel did it last year with the Titans. Now he's fired. So
I was going to say, maybe you don't always want to do it.
Maybe he wasn't as comfortable in his role as he thought he was. But this is becoming a thing, and I think it's a great opportunity for Pleasant to get reps, clearly. He's not necessarily one of these guys who's out and about as a future head coach name, because he hasn't really been a coordinator. But now he's a pass game coordinator. A lot of people have thought, just with his people skills, he could be a really decent head coach eventually. Obviously, McVay thinks that. But we've seen this in other places. Normally, it's a minority assistant coach that you're trying to just have seen through the lens of head coaching candidate.
Yeah, and to me, again, if this is your approach in the preseason, and it's clearly McVay's, it's a philosophy, it doesn't just turn on and off at your convenience. This is how he handles it, right? He has basically delegitimized it to a degree in terms of its import. They get their work in elsewhere, and so you practice what you preach, and you give somebody a chance to give them some shine and a rep. It's basically, if you're secure enough, and he's got a Super Bowl win under his belt, and he's everybody's still in search of a handsome guy that's in shape with a flat top to run their offense or their team, their whole project in general. So yeah, he's pretty secure, pretty comfortable, and kind of doing both worlds. They're getting his foot in the broadcasting world, just to remind folks that he's available for that, which he can use either as an outlet or as leverage. Pretty smart.
It's just so funny. That graphic everybody uses all the time.
Uh-huh.
I tweeted out Aubrey Pleasant was on that Shanahan staff in D.C. back in the day with Kyle McVay.
You know that one.
LaFleur, McDaniel, and every other head coach in the NFL right now. It's pretty much like the league is just, were you on that staff or not? There's like two groups.
There's like six people that weren't, that had no affiliation with them. It's like Andy Reid and like a couple other guys.
The other story, though, you actually sent out in the group chat during that interview was that the Commanders were working out, looks like a bunch of edge defenders. They had four different guys come in to work out together, which tells you they feel like they need an edge for some reason.
Yeah, so nobody signed us yet. I haven't seen that. And if somebody does, I'm sure we'll have it for you. But a few guys. The biggest name there is Justin Hollins, was a former fifth-round pick by the Broncos, who signed a pretty decent-sized deal and has a couple bits of production over the years, but it's names that aren't terribly familiar. But, readily available at this stage in August for after the first week of the preseason training camp-style workout. So it's just interesting. Again, it's always hard to look at a move in a vacuum. If they had just worked out a group of players, one tackle, one running back, one linebacker, one dude for special teams, you'd go, okay, they went, bring me four edge rushers and have them do some sprints for us, or have them hit a practice dummy. Hard not to notice those sorts of things in the week of, again, week two of the preseason.
Yeah, I never try to jump to huge conclusions with an August roster addition or anything like that, but when you bring in that number of players at one position, it just feels different.
Yes.
I don't know how to say it otherwise. A famous director is directing a John Madden movie. You'll never guess who's been cast as John Madden. We'll get to that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
In life, some days are good. and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the audio.
Seems like a bit of an awkward decision, I will say.
The run this guy's on is not good.
Nicolas Cage.
What?
Nicolas Cage is going to play John Madden. So here's the best I can do for you. We've got to steal the Declaration of Independence. And also, football is about football. What? Nicolas Cage? John Madden? I can't see it. I can't do it. What run is he on that's so bad?
The run of movies. He's hasn't made anything worth a damn.
Give me his last few movies. I haven't seen anything good that he's been in.
So he recently did one of those like weird art kind of ones where it was like the that actually was pretty well reviewed, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, which I think was actually about him.
I'm sure.
And that was
the one where he played Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he's like, I'm playing myself. I'm gonna do it here. What? I mean, these movies, like he signed at one point this like huge mega deal. And so when he was, oh God, there's the Army of One, Arsenal, Vengeance, A Love Story, Inconceivable, no. Snowden, Dead no. by Daylight, Dog Eat Dog, Pay the Ghost, The Runner. What are these movies?
What was his last hit? Has he done anything since Gone in 60 Seconds? That was awesome.
So he had a voiceover in Into the Spider-Verse.
Doesn't count.
Which doesn't count because he's not like starring leading in it.
No, he's just doing a voice.
But he did like The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
No.
Like one of those like Disney movies that I guess did okay.
No. I want to know what movie has he carried on his own since Gone in 60 Seconds or I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence. What has he done?
His last like where he's the headliner. I'm playing Ghost Rider. I'm a rider, but I'm a ghost. You know, like. Garbage. All garbage.
What year is that?
2008.
That's so bad.
No, it was 07.
Is that 17 years ago? Are you kidding me?
No. Like, Nicolas Cage at one point was hitting nukes.
The last time I saw Nicolas Cage, and I don't mean in person. We don't see each other very often. But I saw him on whatever. It might have been like a show or something. He looked like he had a lot of work done. He just looked so different and old. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he will. Because I barely recognized him as Nick Cage, maybe he can look like John Madden.
He had a run. All right. Mid to late 90s. Living Las Vegas. Outstanding flick. A little bit depressing, but tough. The Rock. Con Air. Face-offs. Face-offs, I'm sure the plural. Two Faces came off. Snake Eyes. 8mm. Gone in 60 Seconds.
Heater.
Bolts. I mean, nukes.
Swung on and belted.
And I mean belted.
That's Aaron Judge in May.
Just tanks.
Every at-bat ends up with a fan getting a souvenir in section 237. That is a run. What year was Raising Arizona?
Oh, I want to say 92, 91 maybe? Forever ago.
So
87,
many,
longer than that. Wow.
I mean, how many years would you say? Because it goes back that far.
Yeah.
To find like Nick Cage's prime. So what we're saying is, it's not that he doesn't. He's not capable. It's just...
What I'm saying is he's 30 years removed from really good movies. That's tough.
How does he get that role as Madden?
I don't know.
How does Hollywood work?
I don't know. Well, his real last... I'm not even doing a bit. His real last name is Coppola, as in Francis Ford Coppola. He had to change it because everyone got mad about the nepotism. That's how Hollywood works.
Okay, but that's not what I'm asking, really.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just around.
Okay, I did. Well, first, I didn't know that, so that's a good nugget. But what I'm saying is, and maybe I didn't say it clearly. Why would Nick Cage get the Madden role that I'm sure a lot of legitimate, excellent, top-of-their-game actors want right now? Like, how do you cast that? Does the director have a vision of what he wants his version of Madden to be? And somewhere along the lines, as he's reading the script or going over the, you know, writing it with someone or however it goes, do they go, you know what would be perfect for this is Nick Cage?
The guy who sort of talks for a second and then shouts! You know, like, that's what we need for Madden? Now, listen, David O. Russell is a stud. David O. Russell just, you want to talk about a guy that hits tanks. Yeah, all that guy does is make smash movies. Everything from Three Kings to The Fighter, American Hustle, he's awesome. So I think sometimes directors, producers, people at a high level, they nothing but like just bombs in their, or not bombs, actually the opposite, just home runs in their repertoire, in their category, almost want to go, watch this. Watch me pull this off. Watch me do this. Watch, I'm going to turn this, what should be a B actor, screaming his lines, this like, you know, borderline lunatic. I'm going to turn him into this beloved character.
But I
watch
already
this.
Casted this for them. Weren't they listening to Grant and Danny?
Yeah, we did bits.
John Goodman. John Goodman is Madden. What are you doing?
If you want an authentic reprint, just get Caliendo to do the voiceover or something. But in terms of an actor, there are plenty of guys who could do it. You know, like you want to go younger to show some earliers or something, like do a Jonah Hill bit. But John Goodman has the gravitas and the chops to do the whole thing. He's a great actor. For whatever reason, I really do. I think David O. Russell's almost like, this is like a bar bet. Where someone's like, you won't be able to make a movie, bro, with Nicolas Cage as John Madden. He's like, oh yeah, watch me.
I don't understand this casting. I wish I did. By the way, it's funny to think about a lot of like the really like great heavy actors that would have played a good Madden. Sad to say, many of them are no longer with us.
Yeah.
You know, like John Candy would have been great as John Madden, I think. Chris Farley would have played a great Madden. Maybe Belushi could have done Madden.
Yep.
But a lot of these guys, I don't think it was the weight as much as the drugs in some cases.
It depends on the M.
But it might have been a little bit of a column A, a little bit of column B. Would you have been mad if it was Caliendo?
No. Listen.
But I think it's a different. I think they want to make a legitimate movie drama.
Of course.
And Caliendo would have been like a kind of a cheap comedy.
Yeah. Like there's no way to avoid that because he can't not be funny.
Like Goodman, man. That's the answer. Yeah. Okay. This is going to make you mad. Kevin James.
No, it wouldn't make me mad at all.
Kevin James could play.
He could do a serious turn. Like nobody gives any respect to comedic actors. And you don't see comedies anymore. Nobody cares. Everyone just sort of was like, yeah, the fact that Eddie Murphy played 10 different characters at one dinner table, remembering what he said 7 hours ago in a totally different voice. Yeah, that's not that big a deal. But this one person was mute, or they played the piano, or they did a movie that was, you know, during World War I. Nobody ever appreciates that. So nobody ever gives the proper credit to comedic actors. So I think it'd be awesome if somebody like Caliendo got a chance to do it, because no one's ever done a better Madden ever than that guy. I understand what they're trying to do.
If we want to go full-on comedy, I got an idea. I don't know how you're going to feel about it.
Okay.
He's my guy, and I know he could pull it off. Jack Black.
Dude.
Jack Black is John
Madden. Smash.
That'd be great. I bet this movie's fine.
I thought you were going to troll me, by the way, and be like, Larry the Cable Guy as John Madden.
Well, you could do that. I mean, I wouldn't go see the movie, probably. In fact, I'll see the movie no matter what. I think they could have hired someone I've never heard of. But Nicolas Cage is going to play John Madden in a movie from David O. Russell about his life in the making of the popular Madden video game. And this is becoming a little bit of a genre now. You got like the Air movies that were so popular with the behind the scenes on Nike striking a deal with Michael Jordan. The biopic has long been popular with musicians and artists, you know, in that game. And I think it's a type of movie that people really like.
You take these fascinating characters, especially ones that had two full acts, right, in terms of Madden, right? This was, or maybe three ultimately, as a beloved head coach, then as like America's broadcaster, and then as a guy responsible for this multiple $1 trillion franchise that is Madden football, that's an institution. That's actually pretty damn fascinating.
Let's go to Mark in Occoquan on Grant and Danny. What's up, Mark?
Hey, I've been listening to your show for a long time. I grew up with Mike Madden, John Madden's oldest son. I was John Madden's gopher at CBS when I went to college at Rutgers. So I know a little bit about the Madden family.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. In fact, I talked to Mike Madden yesterday. You know, he's been my best friend for 46 years.
Oh, so that's awesome.
Did he know about this? Does he know that Nicolas Cage is playing his pops?
Yeah, there's two movies in the works. One with Will Ferrell supposed to be playing John Madden, and then this one came out. There were some issues about, so John Madden's agent is a guy named Sandy Montag, and Sandy had told the family, this is after John passed away, Sandy had told the family that he read the script, and turned out he hadn't read the script, and they blessed off the movie, and so it's kind of gone back and forth about, there's a lot of poetic licenses taken in the movie.
In which movie, the Ferrell one or the Nicolas Cage one?
The Ferrell one.
Oh, interesting. Hmm. So I wonder if they're going to now have this one after the fact to clean it up. So this always happens, by the way. Like, I'm thinking of Armageddon and Deep Impact.
Right.
Where it's like
two movies about apocalyptic asteroids.
Like a saturation on the same subject. So there's two movies being made about John Madden simultaneously?
Yeah. So there's the one, and I don't know which one was first. I think the
Here's what I know. I'm looking it up now. So it says, May 27th of last year, actor Will Ferrell to portray John Madden in an upcoming movie, according to a report. And I kind of remember talking about this on the show now. So that is basically 14 months ahead of this one, I would say, if we found out today who's going to play Madden in the other one.
Yeah. They were both being negotiated at the same time.
Interesting. Well, color me way more interested in the Will Ferrell offering.
Yeah, well, it's funny, though. In the Will Ferrell movie, it's going to focus, if I remember correctly on that one, it's going to focus more about the Madden video games and how it came to be. But they had Mike portrayed as this nerdy kid who plays Dungeons & Dragons, that he didn't like football and stuff, and Mike was like an all-county linebacker and tight end, played slot back at Harvard. So like I said, there's some poetic licenses taken in those movies.
Interesting.
Appreciate you, Mark. That's good insight.
Thank you, buddy.
I love that he met with the son, and the son's issue with the movie is like, they thought I was a nerd.
They made me academic. I used to thump skulls.
Will Ferrell is slated to star as Madden in an upcoming movie about the Hall of Fame coach and broadcaster, also became famous for the football video game that bears his name. So it sounds like the exact same thing as the other one.
I was going to say.
But why would, if someone's already making this, why would you go about making another one? Like, we had the author on of the Aaron Rodgers book this week. And I asked him, why'd you write a book about Rodgers? And he said, I was actually hired to write a book about LeBron James. But while I was doing my research early on, I found out someone else was working on a biography on LeBron James. And I said, well, why would I do that? Like, similarly, they're probably part of the way through finishing this or making this movie with Will Ferrell.
Yeah, somebody spent some money at some point here, right, to get this going.
Why are they doing this? The movie called Madden will be produced by Amazon and MGM Studios, directed by David O. Russell. This is the same one.
Wait, it's the same movie?
Unless
David O. Russell's doing two Madden movies?
There's no way. So could Will Ferrell have backed out and Nick Cage got the role?
You know, it's a classic mix-up. Two David O. Russell movies.
The movie called Madden, produced Amazon MGM, directed by David O. Russell. Bro, this has to be the same movie.
Okay, there's not two movies.
I mean, there's got to be one Madden movie, and Will Ferrell's got to be out. Can we get someone on this, please? I'm going to text BDK. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We're taking you up to 6:10. Major League Baseball wants to make a crazy change. We'll cover that. Plus, a lot of praise for Jaden Daniels today. We'll read the receipts. Top of the hour, we'll get you ready for Nats baseball ahead of pregame. Nationals, Phillies tonight. Just a good old-fashioned reunion. Nats and some of their former teammates. Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Trey Turner, a few of our favorite Nationals in recent history going to be teaming up against the Nats this evening. We'll get you the lineups and the report on the pitching matchup before we get out of here right at the top of the hour on Grant and Danny. Quickly on Major League Baseball, did you see today there is a story that baseball is at least considering, we'll see if this happens, the possibility of dictating that pitchers have to go six full innings before they can be removed from a game in the future would be a new rule. Now, there would be caveats. If you give up more than four runs, if you get injured, if you've thrown 100 pitches, a team could pull you. But essentially, the idea would be that there wouldn't be bullpen games, that teams couldn't just pull you out after five innings in one run because they don't want you to face the order a third time, taking some of the analytics, bullpen usage, you know, the specificity of matchups and roster out of the equation. It's something baseball is looking into possibly to try to bring the value, as they're calling it, back to the starting pitcher.
I would pick up the phone. You dial 9 to get out. Then you push the area code. I would call either Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or even NASA, whoever wanted to do it. I would take bids for a spaceship. I would take that and put it on that spaceship and shoot it right into the sun. No, forever. Stop even that beginning of a conversation. These ideas, I understand the point of it. And we're tinkering. We're in the process of trying to improve things, make it more accessible, take some of the computers and numbers and analytics out of the game to a degree and make it about playing again. Fine. I get the spirit of it. That one needs to be destroyed instantaneously. Young pitcher, where you have to control some innings. We can't do that anymore. I don't get to. Now you'd rather have him not start 7 or 8 times to control innings, or I can control innings by only having him throw 5 in April, May, and June of maybe of his first season. That's eliminated. I mean, there's a million other kind of scenarios
the
like that.
The proponents of it, including baseball itself, the commissioner's office, is that the 6-inning mandate they hope would provide for a big impact behind the scenes. The belief being that pitchers would have to stop relying so heavily on max velocity that it would set up their training around navigating longer starts with less velo, maybe less overpowering stuff, and more longevity. They think it might cut down on velocity, which in turn, in their opinion, would cut down on injuries. I don't even know if that's how it would work.
You're still not making it to the show unless you light up radar guns. You know what
exactly.
I mean? So I don't know. I don't see it.
A lot of the changes that have been made are good. This is not one I would be for. I don't like dictating to teams how they should go about managing in-game, how they should structure their roster, how they should operate a contest. You know, you shouldn't dictate to a football team how often they've got to pass and run and when they get to pull someone out of the game and put someone else in. And I don't think you should do it in baseball any more than they already do either. So I would be against this big time. I like the idea of trying to get starting pitchers to a point where they go deeper into games and we bring the value back to when I was a kid. And before you went to a game, you actually had to look up who was going to start that day for the Orioles. Mm-hmm. You know, in your day, when you were a kid, maybe it's the newspaper.
That's right.
For me, it was the internet. And I would hop online and say, oh, Eric Bedard's pitching today. Oh, awesome. It's Jimmy Key's day for the Orioles. And you actually saw that guy go throw 7 or 8 innings. We're not there anymore. So I like any emphasis to try to get us back there, but I don't like rules telling teams what they can and can't do.
Yeah, there's also there are different paths to success. You mentioned the NFL. The Ravens do it differently than a lot of teams. The emphasis on the run game. Well, they're winning the division. If you mandated they had to pass a certain number of times to make it more exciting for people, that's not fair. That's not right. And you wouldn't do that, I don't think, in baseball. You try to find a way for a young team or an inexpensive team. I want Tampa Bay to be able to compete with Boston and New York. They can't afford a $30 million a year starting pitcher every year.
I saw a bunch of reporters in Miami today, a bunch of Dolphins guys, talking about how good Jaden Daniels looked. And I saved a few of the comments, but in the interest of time, I'll just read this one from CBS National, Pete Prisco, who's based out of Jacksonville, who's at practice. He said, Commanders practice today, saw Washington play Miami. Jaden Daniels can really throw it. Passes get onto the receiver in a hurry. He is going to be special. The amount of praise for him, he obviously had a really, really good session. It's what we were seeing a lot of in Ashburn. But the amount of praise for him from the Miami media makes you feel good.
It's fun, right? When you take the show on the road and people land eyes on him for the first time, not just on a highlight with on the internet or at LSU, it makes you feel good.
Does today mean anything in the grand scheme? Probably not. Will Saturday mean anything? Not a whole lot. But continually hearing nice things and seeing people blown away by what they're seeing who cover the National Football League is a nice deal. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Next, we'll get you set for Nats baseball, and we'll hit all the headlines of the day that was on the Fan. Stretch run of Grant and Danny on the Fan. A lot going on today. Taking you up to 6:10 in Nats pregame. Running through some of the headlines, it is official. Matthew Judon traded from the New England Patriots to the Atlanta Falcons. Judon, back-to-back double-digit sack seasons before last year, when he had 4 sacks through 4 games when he got hurt. He's 32 years old as of today. Atlanta was the worst pass-rushing team in the NFC and one of the worst in all of football last season. If they're going to make the playoffs this year, they're going to have to get a lot better pass rush, so getting Judon into the fold seems like a no-brainer for them.
There were two ingredients they were missing, talking about the Falcons. Consistent and quality quarterback play with some high-end. they, in theory, went and solved that this offseason, both via the draft and via free agency. They did both. And then, of course, pass rush. So they're poised to win a pretty bad division.
Speaking of the Patriots, they play preseason football tonight. We got ourselves a game to watch. 7 East time. I'm sure it'll be on NFL Network, right? Eagles, Patriots this evening. Yeah, they're going to nationally televise this thing on the network. Drake May going to play the second and third quarters for Philly. I guess it's going to be the Kenny Pickett show for Philadelphia. A whole lot of Kenny Pickett, who's now with the Eagles. Don't sleep on that, Danny. But preseason action. This is the only game before Saturday. A full slate this weekend kicks off with a bevy of games on Saturday. But get a little Drake May tonight in the New England Patriots.
A little appetizer. I saw earlier he was poised to play the majority of the second quarter, or you know, come in second here with the twos.
Yeah, it sounded like second quarter into the third quarter for Drake May.
Yeah. So, but in either way, this is a little appetizer for kind of the quote-unquote real preseason weekend, right? Week one, guys are either out of the lineup altogether, not really playing very much. Now this seems to be, okay, let's the most amount of action we're going to get. It's less than it used to be. It used to be a half, maybe even more. However many possessions you get of starters and impact players, this is the weekend you got it.
This was about as candid as Dan Quinn has been answering any question at camp throughout the entire summer to this point. He was asked about wide receiver today and Jahan Dotson, and he made it pretty clear there is still an ongoing competition for the number 2 receiver job.
Where are you at with the wide receiver 2 search?
I would say we are right in the middle of it. And so you'll see a lot of guys in today. You'll see 2, 3, 4, 5. There's a lot of guys that are really battling. I've been really impressed with Olamide, and I thought he's had a really strong camp. Looking forward to getting Luke some extra work into here, Jahan, Diami. So that's where we're at, and then the special teams is going to have a factor in that as well.
My assumption that Olamide Zaccheaus was going to make the team really was based on the fact that Dan Quinn knew him, that they were together at one point in time, end of Quinn's run in Atlanta. What I didn't really account for, though, was he's got some wiggle and he can actually help. I think he is kind of a younger version of what they got from Jamison Crowder last year. Mm-hmm. So I do fully expect he's going to make the roster. Now, him being your second wide receiver is a problem if that's the case, because he is a bit of a journeyman at this point. He did catch just 10 balls with the Eagles last year. So to go from whatever that role is in Philly to being a potential number 2 here doesn't speak all that highly. But I don't really think that's what's going to happen. I have a hard time believing that the 5'8 wideout is going to be opposite Terry McLaurin in 2 receiver sets a whole lot this season. I think it'll happen some, but I think Dotson, eventually McCaffrey, maybe even Diami Brown, all will get some of those chances early in the season. Zaccheaus has a really nice chance to catch some screens.
He'll carve out a nice role.
Involved in a package of plays they're going to give him. They really like him. They like his shiftiness, and he's had great practices.
If we agree Terry McLaurin will get the most receiver targets, that's pretty obvious, right? I think everyone agrees. We move on. Who gets the second most wideout targets? Because I think it'll be a lot of Eckler, a lot of Ertz, you know, a lot of various other.
I want to take calls on that tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think that's a great
topic. Gets the second most? Last year, Curtis Samuel had almost 100 targets.
I'll say Dotson. I know the momentum is against
that's
that.
That's what
right
I was going to say. The momentum doesn't lead to that.
Today, there is no momentum for that. I would get decent betting odds probably on the betting board. Might even be a plus number with some value there. But I would still go Dotson. I just think he's the second most talented guy.
Because I think it ends up being Zaccheaus. Not because he gets a boatload of looks. It's that like 60 window, as all the things you said. It's slot looks, wide receiver screens, little pop passes, everything in between, gimmicky stuff. Because I don't think they're going to make their outside receivers, Terry McLaurin. Everybody else they're throwing to is going to be close to the line of scrimmage. I think that's where the looks come.
Well, I promise you Zaccheaus will be involved.
Yeah.
You go out to one practice, and you could tell that pretty quickly. All of our camp coverage today on The Fan presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. They have been sponsoring our Commanders coverage throughout this camp. Robert Griffin III out at ESPN. 2 years left on his deal. It was phrased via The Athletic, who broke the story as he got fired. There's been some subsequent reports that say he is out in what is basically a numbers crunch again, that they're just laying people off. He's not alone. Sounds like Samantha Ponder is also out at ESPN. But 2 years left on Griffin's deal. He was a rocket ship rising star on a heater for a very short time, and then it was over. And we have seen that play out here in D.C., yeah. and sadly it happened again at ESPN. My guess is he's going to be a highly sought-after television free agent, though. He's got a huge social media following.
He's talented,
likes
too.
Likes to mix it up online. He's got a big personality. He generates a lot of clicks and viral moments. I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, he'll land on his feet. It's just a matter of how is he best deployed. How do you want to use him, right? You want him as your college football analyst on games. You want him kind of in the studio chopping it up. You want him on a debate show. I think he could do just about anything.
All right, let's get to your Nats starting lineups and pitching matchups presented by the Window Man. Since 1989, the Window Man has been the educational window company. Get your free, no-pressure, in-home estimate at thewindowman.com or at their Fairfax showroom. Nats Phillies pregame at 6:10, first pitch at 6:40.
Your quick Phillies note, the entire top of their order used to play for the Nationals. It's just weird, and I don't like it. Schwarber, Turner, Harper, it's only painful when I look. Behind Mitchell Parker, leading off playing shortstop, see? Abrams batting second, your DH Juan Yepez batting third in left field. James Wood batting fourth. Andres Chaparro at first base. Luis Garcia hitting fifth at second. K-Bear Ruiz doing the catching. Alex Call in right field batting seventh. Jose Tenyonitsiva back at third base hitting eighth. And your guy, my guy, our guy, Jacob Young at center field.
Zach Wheeler starting for the Phillies. Annually now a Cy Young candidate, has 156 Ks and 142 innings, whip, one on the nose, a 2.78 ERA, one of the best pitchers in the NL at 34 years old. Tough, tough road ahead for the Nats tonight against Wheeler. They counter with the southpaw Mitchell Parker, who has not allowed an earned run in his last two starts. Six innings, three unearned runs going back a few starts ago, and then last time out, six and a third innings, eight hits, no earnings, and five strikeouts against Milwaukee and the Angels. So they'll try to make it three straight starts without an earned run allowed. The 24-year-old lefty has been a revelation for the Nats in the rotation.
If I was a Nats hitter, I might have let Skip know this morning. I'm a little stiff. I'm not sore. I'm not hurt. It's maybe just one night off I need. My hammy calf groin's a little sore. Stiff.
Nationals weather report presented by Pepco. Game day weather via Pepco because storm season's here, and they know a little prep makes a big difference. Get storm informed at pepco.com/storm prep. Our show meteorologist today is Darris Dameron.
It should be a pleasant 87 degrees at first pitch out in Philadelphia, Citizens Bank Park. No chance of precipitation, some cloud cover later on in the game, but should be a pleasant night out there at Citizens Bank Park in Philly.
Thank you, Dad. Very well done.
Good job,
much
Dad.
Appreciate it. I told Darris earlier, he's not a big fan of D-Daddy, which I kind of like D-Daddy.
Yeah.
So I said, what about Daddy? He's like, that's worse. And I said, what about Dad? He said, well, those are my initials. And I said, so you like that? He said, absolutely not. I said, but they're your initials. He's like, yeah. So what if we just start calling you Dad? So with all due respect to my father, Dennis Paulson, I have two dads now.
See that?
Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow at 2.
Love you, Dad.
Thank you for coming.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Top of the hour, we'll get you ready for Nats baseball ahead of pregame. Nationals, Phillies tonight. Just a good old-fashioned reunion. Nats and some of their former teammates. Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Trey Turner. A few of our favorite Nationals in recent history. Going to be teaming up against the Nats this evening. We'll get you the lineups and the report on the pitching matchup before we get out of here right at the top of the hour on Grant and Danny. Quickly on Major League Baseball, did you see today there is a story that baseball is at least considering, we'll see if this happens, The possibility of dictating that pitchers have to go six full innings before they can be removed from a game in the future would be a new rule. Now, there would be caveats. If you give up more than four runs, if you get injured, if you've thrown 100 pitches, a team could pull you. But essentially, the idea would be that there wouldn't be bullpen games, that teams couldn't just pull you out after five innings and one run because they don't want you to face the order a third time. Taking some of the analytics, bullpen usage, you know, the specificity of matchups and roster out of the equation. It's something baseball is looking into possibly to try to bring the value, as they're calling it, back to the starting pitcher.
I would pick up the phone. You dial 9 to get out. Then you push the area code. I would call either Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or even NASA, whoever wanted to do it. I would take bids for a spaceship. I would take that and put it on that spaceship and shoot it right into the sun. No, forever. Stop even that beginning of a conversation. These ideas, I understand the point of it. And we're tinkering. We're in the process of trying to improve things, make it more accessible, take some of the computers and numbers and analytics out of the game to a degree and make it about playing again. Fine. I get the spirit of it. That one needs to be destroyed instantaneously. Young pitcher, where you have to control some innings. We can't do that anymore. I don't get to. Now you'd rather have him not start 7 or 8 times to control innings, or I can control innings by only having him throw 5 in April, May, and June of maybe of his first season. That's eliminated. I mean, there's a million other kind of scenarios
like that. The proponents of it, including baseball itself, the commissioner's office, is that the 6-inning mandate they hope would, you know, provide for a big impact behind the scenes. The belief being that pitchers would have to stop relying so heavily on max velocity that it would set up their training around navigating longer starts with less velo, maybe less overpowering stuff, and more longevity. They think it might cut down on velocity, which in turn, in their opinion, would cut down on injuries. I don't even know if that's how it would work.
You're still not making it to the show unless you light up radar guns. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't see it.
A lot of the changes that have been made are good. This is not one I would be for. I don't like dictating to teams how they should go about managing in-game, how they should structure their roster, how they should operate a contest. You know, you shouldn't dictate to a football team how often they've got to pass and run and when they get to pull someone out of the game and put someone else in. And I don't think you should do it in baseball any more than they already do either. So I would be against this big time. I like the idea of trying to get starting pitchers to a point where they go deeper into games and we bring the value back to when I was a kid. And before you went to a game, you actually had to look up who was going to start that day for the Orioles. Mm-hmm. You know, in your day, when you were a kid, maybe it's the newspaper.
That's right.
For me, it was the internet. And I would hop online and say, oh, Eric Bedard's pitching today. Oh, awesome. It's Jimmy Key's day for the Orioles. And you actually saw that guy go throw 7 or 8 innings. We're not there anymore. So I like any emphasis to try to get us back there, but I don't like rules telling teams what they can and can't do.
Yeah, there's also there are different paths to success. You mentioned the NFL. The Ravens do it differently than a lot of teams. The emphasis on the run game. Well, they're winning the division. If you mandated they had to pass a certain number of times to make it more exciting for people, that's not fair. That's not right. And you wouldn't do that, I don't think, in baseball. You try to find a way for a young team or an inexpensive team. I want Tampa Bay to be able to compete with Boston and New York. They can't afford a $30 million a year starting pitcher every year.
I saw a bunch of reporters in Miami today, a bunch of Dolphins guys, talking about how good Jaden Daniels looked. And I saved a few of the comments, but in the interest of time, I'll just read this one from CBS National, Pete Prisco, who's based out of Jacksonville, who's at practice. He said, Commanders practice today, saw Washington play Miami. Jaden Daniels can really throw it. Passes get onto the receiver in a hurry. He is going to be special. The amount of praise for him, he obviously had a really, really good session. It's what we were seeing a lot of in Ashburn. But the amount of praise for him from the Miami media makes you feel good.
It's fun, right? When you take the show on the road and people land eyes on him for the first time, not just on a highlight on the internet or at LSU, it makes you feel good.
Does today mean anything in the grand scheme? Probably not. Will Saturday mean anything? Not a whole lot. But continually hearing nice things and seeing people blown away by what they're seeing who cover the National Football League is a nice deal. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Next, we'll get you set for Nats baseball, and we'll hit all the headlines of the day that was on the Fan. Stretch run of Grant and Danny on the Fan. A lot going on today. Taking you up to 6:10 in Nats pregame. Running through some of the headlines, it is official. Matthew Judon traded from the New England Patriots to the Atlanta Falcons. Judon, back-to-back double-digit sack seasons before last year when he had four sacks through four games when he got hurt. He's 32 years old as of today. Atlanta was the worst pass-rushing team in the NFC and one of the worst in all of football last season. If they're going to make the playoffs this year, they're going to have to get a lot better pass rush. So getting Judon into the fold seems like a no-brainer for them.
There were two ingredients they were missing, talking about the Falcons. Consistent and quality quarterback play with some high-end. They, in theory, went and solved that this offseason, both via the draft and via free agency. They did both. And then, of course, pass rush. So they're poised to win a pretty bad division.
Speaking of the Patriots, they play preseason football tonight. We got ourselves a game to watch. 7 East time. I'm sure it'll be on NFL Network, right? Eagles, Patriots this evening. Yeah, they're going to nationally televise this thing on the network. Drake May going to play the second and third quarters for Philly. I guess it's going to be the Kenny Pickett show for Philadelphia. A whole lot of Kenny Pickett, who's now with the Eagles. Don't sleep on that, Danny. But preseason action. This is the only game before Saturday. A full slate this weekend kicks off with a bevy of games on Saturday. But get a little Drake May tonight in the New England Patriots.
A little appetizer. I saw earlier he was poised to play the majority of the second quarter, or you know, come in second here with the twos.
Yeah, it sounded like second quarter into the third quarter for Drake May.
Yeah. So, but in either way, this is a little appetizer for kind of the quote unquote real preseason weekend, right? Week one, guys are either out of the lineup altogether, not really playing very much. Now this seems to be, okay, let's whatever the most amount of action we're going to get. It's less than it used to be. It used to be a half, maybe even more. However many possessions you get of starters and impact players, this is the weekend you got it.
This was about as candid as Dan Quinn has been answering any question at camp throughout the entire summer to this point. He was asked about wide receiver today and Jahan Dotson, and he made it pretty clear there is still an ongoing competition for the number two receiver job.
Where are you at with the wide receiver two search?
I would say we are right in the middle of it. And so you'll see a lot of guys in today. You'll see 2, 3, 4, 5. There's a lot of guys that are really battling. I've been really impressed with Olamide, and I thought he's had a really strong camp. I'm looking forward to getting Luke some extra work into here, Jahan, Diami. So that's where we're at, and then the special teams is going to have a factor in that as well.
My assumption that Olamide Zaccheaus was going to make the team really was based on the fact that Dan Quinn knew him, that they were together at one point in time, end of Quinn's run in Atlanta. What I didn't really account for, though, was he's got some wiggle and he can actually help. I think he is kind of a younger version of what they got from Jamison Crowder last year. So I do fully expect he's going to make the roster. Now, him being your second wide receiver is a problem if that's the case, because he is a bit of a journeyman at this point. He did catch just 10 balls with the Eagles last year. So to go from whatever that role is in Philly to being a potential number two here doesn't speak all that highly. But I don't really think that's what's going to happen. I have a hard time believing that the 5'8 wideout is going to be opposite Terry McLaurin in two receiver sets a whole lot this season. I think it'll happen some, but I think Dotson, eventually McCaffrey, maybe even Diami Brown, all will get some of those chances early in the season. Zaccheaus has a really nice chance to catch some screens.
He'll carve out a nice role.
Involved in a package of plays they're going to give him. They really like him. They like his shiftiness, and he's had great practices.
If we agree Terry McLaurin will get the most receiver targets, that's pretty obvious, right? I think everyone agrees. We move on. Who gets the second most wideout targets? Because I think it'll be a lot of Eckler, a lot of Ertz, you know, a lot of various other.
I want to take calls on that tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think that's a great
Who
topic.
Gets the second most? Last year, Curtis Samuel had almost 100 targets.
I'll say Dotson. I know the momentum is against
that's
that
what
right
I was going to say. The momentum doesn't lead to that.
Today, there is no momentum for that. I would get decent betting odds probably on the betting board. Might even be a plus number with some value there. But I would still go Dotson. I just think he's the second most talented guy.
Because I think it ends up being Zaccheaus. Not because he gets a boatload of looks. It's that like 60 window, as all the things you said. It's slot looks, wide receiver screens, little pop passes, everything in between, gimmicky stuff. Because I don't think they're going to make their outside receivers, Terry McLaurin. Everybody else they're throwing to is going to be close to the line of scrimmage. I think that's where the looks come.
Well, I promise you Zaccheaus will be involved.
Yeah.
I mean, you go out to one practice, and you could tell that pretty quickly. All of our camp coverage today on The Fan presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. They have been sponsoring our Commanders coverage throughout this camp. Robert Griffin III out at ESPN. 2 years left on his deal. It was phrased via The Athletic, who broke the story as he got fired. There's been some subsequent reports that say he is out in what is basically a numbers crunch again, that they're just laying people off. He's not alone. It sounds like Samantha Ponder is also out at ESPN. But 2 years left on Griffin's deal. He was a rocket ship rising star on a heater for a very short time, and then it was over. And we have seen that play out here in D.C., yeah. And sadly it happened again at ESPN. My guess is he's going to be a highly sought-after television free agent, though. He's got a huge social media following.
He's talented,
likes
too.
To mix it up online. He's got a big personality. He generates a lot of clicks and viral moments. I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, he'll land on his feet. It's just a matter of how is he best deployed. How do you want to use him, right? You want him as your college football analyst on games. You want him kind of in the studio chopping it up. You want him on a debate show. I think he could do just about anything.
All right, let's get to your Nats starting lineups and pitching matchups. Presented by The Window Man. Since 1989, The Window Man has been the educational window company. Get your free, no pressure, in-home estimate at thewindowman.com or at their Fairfax showroom. Nats Phillies pregame at 6:10. First pitch at 6:40.
Your quick Phillies note, the entire top of their order used to play for the Nationals. It's just weird, and I don't like it. Schwarber, Turner, Harper. It's only painful when I look. Behind Mitchell Parker, leading off playing shortstop. See? Abrams batting second, year DH Juan Yepez batting third in left field. James Wood batting fourth. Andres Chaparro at first base. Luis Garcia hitting fifth at second. K-Bear Ruiz doing the catching. Alex Collin right field batting seventh. Jose Tenyanonitsiva back at third base hitting eighth. And your guy, my guy, our guy, Jacob Young at center field.
Zach Wheeler starting for the Phillies. Annually now a Cy Young candidate. Has 156 Ks and 142 innings. Whip, one on the nose. A 2.78 ERA. One of the best pitchers in the NL at 34 years old. Tough, tough road ahead for the Nats tonight against Wheeler. They counter with the southpaw Mitchell Parker, who has not allowed an earned run in his last two starts. Six innings, three unearned runs going back a few starts ago. And then last time out, 6 1/3 innings, eight hits, no earnings, and five strikeouts against Milwaukee and the Angels. So they'll try to make it three straight starts without an earned run allowed. The 24-year-old lefty has been a revelation for the Nats in the rotation.
If I was a Nats hitter, I might have let Skip know this morning. I'm a little stiff. Not sore. I'm not hurt. It's maybe just one night off I need. My hammy calf groin's a little sore. Stiff.
Nationals weather report presented by Pepco. Game day weather via Pepco because storm season's here and they know a little prep makes a big difference. Get storm informed at pepco.com/storm prep. Our show meteorologist today is Darris Dameron.
It should be a pleasant 87 degrees at first pitch out in Philadelphia, Citizens Bank Park. No chance precipitation, some cloud cover later on in the game, but should be a pleasant night out there at Citizens Bank Park in Philly.
Thank you, Dad. Very well done.
Good job,
much
Dad.
Appreciated. I told Darris earlier, he's not a big fan of D-Daddy, which I kind of like D-Daddy.
Yeah.
So I said, what about Daddy? He's like, that's worse. And I said, what about Dad? He said, well, those are my initials. And I said, so you like that? He said, absolutely not. I said, but they're your initials. He's like, yeah. So what if we just start calling you Dad? So with all due respect to my father, Dennis Paulson, I have two dads now.
See that?
Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow at 2.
Love you, Dad.
Thank you for coming.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.